This Sandwell News podcast is divided into chapters.
For the coming week, sunrise will be at around 8 a.m, sunset at 4:45. Looks like temperatures will be quite low at the start of the week, around 1 degree Celsius.
Welcome to the Sandwell News for the blind and visually impaired community living in and around Sandwell. This edition for the 24th of January, available to listeners by post, streaming on the internet and via our podcast feed.
Some headlines from this week's readings from the Express and Star. Wednesday's news: older people skipping showers to save cash, and the increase in general debt. Dudley AMD: other local towns in bids for UK Town of Culture. Thursday: new tougher bylaws proposed for West Midlands Metro. Ramsey positive Albion will soon be on the rise. Mark Andrews reflects on the region's bids for UK Town of Culture. Friday: five exercises to boost longevity. Plans to help long-term sick back to work. Saturday: wheelchair user was assigned wrong seat at a concert. Passenger satisfaction increases on metro and local trains. Wonan's sight restored through injections. Monday: Henry's Blues House sessions in West Bromwich. Ramsey experiences every emotion on his first Albion match. Customers urged to stop flushing strange things down the loo. Tuesday: Sandwell's regeneration projects.
All those stories and more, courtesy of Express and Star Publications. Now, a belated poem from our long-time supporter and founder, or one of the founders of Sandwell Visually Impaired, all those years ago. It's Graham Price. His poem is being read by Gavin.
Awake, 2026. The new year awakes to a life filled with possibilities. Happiness, or indeed sadness, hovering like a drone. Enlivened by a plethora of activities, love and kindness, amongst others, the happenings we own. These sure to widen and stretch our creativities, allowing for happiness in 2026 to land with you and those beyond your home. Wishing you all a happy new year.
And thanks, Graham. I would have liked to have included that poem last week, but it arrived with me just a little too late. Before we get to this week's news, a reminder of something we reported last week. We're a bit late reporting it, but here's a reminder because it's going on for the next month or two. That's Henry's Blues House.
Henry's Blues House comes to West Bromwich free live blues gigs every Friday at the new West Bromwich Indoor Market from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Enjoy live music, street food and drinks. Henry's Blues House history dates back to 1968. When it launched at the Crown Pub in Birmingham. It hosted early gigs by Earth, later Black Sabbath, and featured icons like Jethro Tull, Status Quo, and Thin Lizzy. Now, this iconic blues club is bringing its magic to the Black Country. Food court stays open until 9 p.m. with Island Lounge, Afro-Caribbean favourites, including freshly cooked jerk chicken kadayapan, delicious curries and Sri Lankan street food, plus a range of alcoholic and non-alcoholic drinks. January and February lineup. Friday 23rd January, Jamie Thayer and the Worried Men. Friday 30th January, Slide Boy Roy. Friday 6th February, The Shuffle Pack. Friday 13th February, Honey Boy Hickling Blues Band. Friday 20th February, The Shakedown Brothers. Friday 27th February, Chicken Bone Blues Band. No booking is required, simply turn up.
Hi everyone, it's Mia. I'm back. It feels like it's been a long time since I've done this, but I hope everyone had a lovely Christmas and New Year and is enjoying the new year. Has anyone got any New Year resolutions? I've recently started taking up running and it's a lot harder than I thought it was going to be, but I'm getting into it. So today I'm going to be reading some newspaper articles dated the 14th of January from the Express and Star. Man, 40, jailed after attacking security guard. A man aged 40 has been jailed after stealing alcohol from a supermarket in Sandwell and assaulting a security guard. On the 5th of January, Stephen Barker stole alcohol from a supermarket on Brickhouse Lane, Tipton. He was then challenged by security after walking past all of the payment tills. Security staff recovered the alcohol and attempted to obtain his details. However, Baker became aggressive and assaulted the security worker. He punched staff multiple times. Officers responded, and he was arrested on suspicion of assault and shop theft. Consequently, he was charged and admitted offences at an earlier hearing. Baker of Witton Road appeared at Wolverhampton Magistrates Court and was sentenced to 16 weeks in prison. A spokesperson for West Midlands Police said, "We're catching hundreds more suspected shop thieves in the West Midlands as we continue to act against retail crime across the region. Please report any incidents of retail crime by calling 101. Always call 999 in an emergency," the police spokesman said. Drugs seized from stolen car. Police have arrested two men after officers spotted a stolen car while on patrol in Sandwell. The vehicle had been taken from Smethwick on Sunday, but was seen by West Midlands police officers in Poplar Rise, Tivdale, on Monday afternoon. Police detained two men, and during searches in the area they recovered a small amount of Class A drugs and a more substantial amount of cannabis. A 33-year-old man was arrested on suspicion of theft of a motor vehicle, handling stolen goods, taking a vehicle without consent, and possession of drugs. A 38-year-old man was detained on suspicion of theft of a motor vehicle, possession of Class B drugs with intent to supply, and burglary. Former police officer facing drug and misconduct charges. Ex-PC, alleged to have misused computer system to access data on known criminals. A former West Midlands police officer was today due to appear in court charged with multiple counts of misconduct in police office and drug-related offences. Ex-West Midlands Police Constable Kaylee Moy, aged 28, faces four counts of misconduct in public office, which stands for MIPO, a charge of being concerned in the supply of cannabis to a named individual in contravention of the Misuse of Drugs Act 1971, and two offences of possessing cannabis. The MIPO offences relate to allegations that the former officer misused police computer systems by accessing information about four known criminals. She is also accused of forming intimate relationships with the four and failing to notify West Midlands Police. The offences are reported to have taken place between September 2022 and February 2024. The investigation was conducted by West Midlands Police under the direction of the IOPC's Anti-Corruption Unit, which followed a referral by the force in November 2023. An IOPC spokesperson said, "Ex-Police Constable Kaylee Moy, aged 28, faces four counts of MIPO, a charge of being concerned in the supply of cannabis to a named individual in contravention of the Misuse of Drugs Act 1971, and two offences of possessing cannabis, a Class B controlled drug, in contravention of the same act. An investigation was conducted by West Midlands Police under the direction of the IOPC's Anti-Corruption Unit, which followed a referral by the force in November 2023. On completion of the investigation, a file of evidence was sent to the Crown Prosecution Service, which decided to authorise the charges. Moy is due to appear before Birmingham Magistrates Court today. Older people skipping showers to save cash. Age UK warns of drastic measures as many struggle to cope. Some older people are taking drastic measures, such as using less electricity, having baths or showers less often, or skipping meals this winter to make ends meet financially, Age UK has warned in a shocking report released today. Research for the charity indicates that a third of over 65s are using less electricity this winter to make ends meet, while 35% said they are turning their heating down to do this. Around 1 in 7 will have baths or showers less often this winter to get by financially. 1 in 20 said they would be skipping meals this winter to help make ends meet. Age UK's Crisis Hiding in Plain Sight campaign is urging older people to check if they are entitled to extra financial support. The charity said there is no room for complacency when it comes to reducing poverty among the growing older population. Age UK said it is concerned that as many as 2 million pensioners could be living in poverty in the next few years. The charity said it is strongly encouraging new and existing pensioners in 2026 to check what financial support they may be eligible for, including pension credit, which tops up people's incomes to a minimum level and acts as a gateway to other financial help in later life. It said many older people miss out on financial support simply because they assume they will not qualify or find it daunting and difficult to complete applications without help. This year, Age UK is urging every new and existing pensioner to check their eligibility for pension credit and other pensioner benefits, make applications early, and encourage others to check their eligibility too. Caroline Abrahams, Charity Director at Age UK, said, "As a country, we need to do a lot more to tackle poverty among older people. A social ill set to worsen as our population ages, we fear, unless something changes, and soon." She added, "In 2025, Age UK's National Advice Line helped 6,006 older people with benefit checks and applying for benefits, identifying more than £36 million of support, averaging at £5,900 per person. This year, our ambition is to exceed that if we can, because we know it's one of the most important contributions we can make as a charity. For any older person trying to live on a small retirement income, every single pound counts, and even a small weekly top-up could make a tangible difference." Yonder carried out a survey of more than 2,600 people across the UK aged 65 plus in October and November as part of the research, as well as a survey of more than 6,200 people aged 18 to 64. Ofgem has information on its website to help people who are struggling with energy bills. The Ofgem website says people should contact their supplier as soon as they can if they are worried about paying their bills. Ofgem's rules mean that suppliers must work with customers to agree on a payment plan they can afford. The Age UK report comes as it has revealed more than a third of people expect to run short of cash before the end of January, as winter bills and Christmas spending take their toll. And the majority of those who will run out of money this month expect to have used up all of their monthly income by tomorrow, according to research for money platform Intuit Credit Karma. One in seven people are planning to take out new credit products in January to cover the shortfall and get ahead of their expected debt, the survey suggested. Credit Karma's platform data indicated that January 8th was the most popular day to apply for credit products in 2025. Eleanor Hayek, Head of Product for UK and Canada, Intuit Credit Karma, said, "The new year is often when people take stock of their finances, but for many, that moment of reflection can quickly turn into concern, especially around mid-January when the reality of festive spending and a longer time between paychecks catches up with you." She said those considering a balance transfer card should make sure they understand the terms and have a clear repayment plan. The battle is on. Which towns could win culture title? The race has begun to select Britain's first town of culture, with a Black Country town one of the first out of the blocks to stake its claims. Entries open today for the competition to find the UK Town of Culture 2028, with the number of towns in the West Midlands expressing an interest. The competition was announced by Culture Secretary Lisa Nandy before Christmas, and within minutes, Dudley MP Sonia Kumar had staked her town's claim for the accolade. She cites the Town Zoo, Castle and Black Country Living Museum and says it would give a much-needed boost to ambitious plans to extend the Dudley Canal Tunnel to the world-renowned Wren's Nest National Nature Reserve. Since then, fellow Dudley Borough MPs Alex Belinga and Kat Eccles have staked rival claims for their constituencies. Mr. Belinga, who organised a parliamentary debate on the subject last week, championed the stunning landscape of Leasowes Park and the work of the Halsowen Abbey Trust as reasons why Hal's Owen should be given consideration. Miss Eccles has been making the case for a joint bid for Stourbridge and Briley Hill, highlighting the town's glassmaking heritage and grassroots music scene. Elsewhere in the wider region, Stoke-upon-Trent, Ledbury and Ross-on-Wye have also expressed interest. But which other West Midland towns might be in the running? Lichfield, officially a city but still eligible, seems an obvious contender, with its historic cathedral, thriving theatre and popular food festival, not to mention being the birthplace of dictionary compiler Samuel Johnson. West Bromwich, as the birthplace of rock legend Robert Plant, Hollywood star Madeline Carroll, could also be a contender, along with Warsaw with its avant-garde art gallery and historic leather industry. Cannock's coal mining heritage could also make it a contender, while Stafford, with its Norman Castle, Gatehouse Theatre and ancient High House, could also be in the frame. Bilston, as the home of glam rock band Slade, Robin music venue and steel-making history, could be an interesting left-field choice. Miss Nandy, whose own Wigan constituency might also be in contender, said there was much for people to be proud of in the towns they were from. From the rich local history to unique festivals and celebrations, they have shaped our national story for decades, she said. Now it's time they take centre stage and showcase the unique stories they have to tell. The competition will run alongside the UK City of Culture competition, launched in 2009. Londonderry eventually became the first City of Culture in 2013, beating off rival bids from Birmingham, Norwich and Sheffield. Since then, the battle has been held by Hull, Coventry and Bradford. Miss Nandy added, "We have seen the transformative power of culture through the UK City of Culture competition. I want to make sure that towns have the same opportunity to make a real difference to their local community and show the world exactly why their town is so special." Applicants will be invited to deliver a vibrant culture programme, demonstrating their town's visions and voices. A panel led by Sir Phil Redmond, creator of the Grange Hill and Brookside television series, will then whittle the entries down on the basis of how they plan to tell their town's unique story, how they will bring everyone in a community together, and how towns will make their plans a reality. A shortlist is expected in spring, with each town making the grade receiving a £60,000 grant to produce their final bids. Three finalists, one small, one medium, one large town, will be chosen. The winner will be crowned UK Town of Culture 2028 and receive a £3 million prize. The two runners-up will each receive £250,000 to deliver elements of their bid, from refreshed community infrastructure to electric music festivals. Competition chairman Sir Philip Redmond said he was delighted to have been appointed to the role, as in the past it's been hard to adequately demonstrate the diversity of the UK's cultural landscape through the UK City of Culture's urban lens. The two competitions will complement each other, while providing more opportunities for more places to both demonstrate and celebrate that creativity is not confined to the great urban concert halls, theatres or galleries, he said. It is in everything we do together, in every town, village, neighbourhood, street or road. UK Town of Culture asks, what makes your town special? What makes it people proud to be there? And why should that be celebrated? The government says the UK City of Culture competition has delivered transformative benefits for its four winners. Bradford, which held the title last year, is projected to benefit from £389 million in growth across the district, with visitor numbers up 25% during its year in the spotlight. Early estimates show audiences for its City of Culture programme exceeded 3 million, with 80% of residents surveyed saying it improved their well-being and made them feel proud of where they live. The search for UK City of Culture 2029 is also open to applications from cities, larger towns, regions and groups of places. The winner will receive £10 million.
Hello and Happy New Year to everyone. This is Jan Lloyd reading articles from the Express and Star on the 15th of January. New council houses to cost nearly £1 million over budget, council confirms. A project to build new council housing in Tipton has gone nearly £1 million over budget. The 18 new flats and bungalows in Beaver Road off Toll End Road, Tipton, were completed last June to the tune of £4.4 million, but will now cost an extra £929,449, according to Sandwell Council. The council said the overspend on the mix of two-bedroom bungalows and one-bedroom flats was because of several unforeseen and regulatory-driven challenges, and it was a worst-case estimate. The council said the original budget had only covered construction of the new council houses and had left out consultant and survey fees, and any money used to deliver, manage and coordinate the project fell outside the original budget. Inflation changes to building regulations and work by the Environment Agency had also added to costs, the council said. Sandwell Council approved the plans at the end of 2021 and handed Harper Group the £4.4 million contract in September 2022. The homes were built by June last year. The council report said inflation on labour, plant and material costs, which increased in the 5 months between the contract being awarded and work beginning, added £90,000 to the bill. The council also said construction of the new housing was in full flow when the Environment Agency closed the site for 3.5 months, adding £23,000 to costs. The Environment Agency said more drainage work was needed in Beaver Road, which also added to the overspend. Building regulation changes added an extra £173,000, the need for stronger retaining walls required an extra £98,000, and the removal of Japanese knotweed added a further £65,000 to costs. The report said, the budget position is a reflection of external regulatory requirements, unexpected ground and site conditions and changes introduced during the course of the project. The council said all but the forgotten survey and consultant fees could not have been reasonably foreseen at tender stage and were necessary to either comply with statutory obligations, protect health and safety, or accommodate client-driven changes. The underutilised patch of grass in Beaver Road was prone to fly-tipping and antisocial behaviour after earlier being allotments and the site of post-war prefabricated homes. The council said ground conditions at the site were particularly challenging. It was incredible. The sky turned black and the smoke was acrid. More than 100 firefighters sent to scene of huge blaze that has completely destroyed historic Sunbeam Workshop, by James Vikramovich. It was one of the biggest fires the West Midlands has ever seen, turning a bright blue sky black for many people living nearby. A major fire at a car repair shop in Wolverhampton broke out at around 7:30 a.m. Within 20 minutes, huge plumes of smoke and flames filled the city skyline. More than 100 firefighters were sent to the scene. The smoke could be seen from as far away as Shropshire, Staffordshire and Worcestershire. The fire broke out at a unit in Sunbeam Street, near the junction with Upper Villiers Street in the Blakenhall area of Wolverhampton. The area has many businesses in units that were once part of the city's famous Sunbeam Works. West Midlands Fire Service sent more than 20 fire engines, with the first one on the scene in under 3 minutes. Firefighters from Bilston, Fallings Park, Tipton, Willenhall, Haydon Cross, Wensbury, Dudley and Warsaw were on the scene. A spokesperson yesterday said, "This is a fire in a factory building. Firefighters wearing breathing apparatus are currently tackling the fire using hose reel jets. We have 17 fire engines, 2 4x4 brigade response vehicles, 2 hydraulic aerial platforms and a drone team at the scene. Toxic smoke filled the air and people living or working nearby were asked to close windows and doors and to stay inside. Large parts of Sunbeam Street and Upper Villiers Street were sealed off and people were asked to avoid the area. The fire was on a major bus route and the NX West Midlands Service 25 between Penderford and Wolverhampton was among those diverted. Nearby St Luke's C of E aided primary school closed for safety reasons due to the fire, with pupils sent home for the day. There were no reports of any injuries or anyone suffering from smoke inhalation, but the building involved was expected to be completely destroyed by the flames. A worker from a company near the fire said he hoped the fire wouldn't cause any damage to the company's building. He said, I think we should be okay as the fire is going the other way, but we saw the orange glow from our windows. I was driving in from the M6 toll and you saw the smoke from there, so you can tell how bad it is. Another said he had seen the smoke cloud from Codsall yesterday. He said, I was travelling into work this morning and saw the cloud from miles away. People have been telling me about the fire and how they've seen someone running out of their businesses with gas canisters and other bits. It's frightening because of how big it looks and how high the flames are. Members of the Guru Tegh Bahadur Gurdwara in Upper Villiers Street opened their doors to the public. A spokesman said, we hope it doesn't cause any damage as it's going to cost a lot to repair things. We are working here as normal and are open to anyone looking for a place to get warm. I'm not overly concerned about the fire affecting us as I think the fire service are doing the very best they can to contain it. People reported seeing the flames from many miles away. Claire Dolman said, we can see the fire from the roof of Chillington Hall near Brewood. The smoke reaches all the way to Bushbury Hill. Catherine Pickett from Penn saw the drama unfold as she drove to work along the Penn Road. She said, the smoke was incredible and grew very quickly. I've never seen anything like it. The air and the smoke was acrid. It was frightening. You could smell it from inside the car, even though the windows were closed. It was business as usual for one man who came to work around 7 a.m. and noticed smoke and flames around 250 yards from his workshop in Sunbeam Street. Anthony Talbot has run Bars for All, making bars for the pub and retail trade, and a private customers for around 10 years, and said yesterday morning was quite dramatic. He said it was spectacular. You could see it clearly from where I was. I believe it was a bed and mattress place where the fire started, though it hasn't been confirmed, and the firefighters were soon on the scene with police as well. The pictures that accompany it show the building with smoke pouring out of the top of it, but also there's an aerial view, obviously taken by a drone, showing the buildings as they were before the fire. West Midlands Metro Bylaws 2026. Notice inviting representations on proposed changes to the West Midlands Metro bylaws. Notice is hereby given under Section 67 of the Transport Act 1962 that the West Midlands Combined Authority WMCA intends to make changes to the West Midlands Metro bylaws under Section 49 of the Midland Metro Act 1989 to enable the WMCA to strengthen fare enforcement, improve passenger safety and update operational practices. Key changes include enhanced fare enforcement, including penalties for failure to produce a valid ticket after alighting the metro, among other provisions. Extension of prohibition on smoking to include vaping, e-cigarettes and other forms of smoking. Prohibition on bringing weapons on the metro, including knives, bladed articles, firearm and other offensive weapons without lawful authority. Enabling passengers to carry fully folded bikes. Enabling passengers to bring their guide dog for lawful assistance and updated wording to reflect modern technologies and operational standards. The current West Midlands Metro bylaws, which these are planned to replace, can be accessed from the West Midlands Metro website. Before these proposed changes come into effect, anyone affected by the changes has an opportunity to make representations on the changes directly to the Department of Transport, the DfT. To enable you to make representations, copies of the proposed bylaws can be accessed on our website, tfwm.org.uk. Read at our office, 16 Summer Lane, Birmingham, B193SD. And we will be open to inspection without payment on any weekday during usual business hours until the 13th of February 2026. Written representations about the bylaws, including any objections, should be sent to the Department for Transport at midlandmetro.bylaws@dft.gov.uk by the 13th of February 2026. Should you have any queries about this notice or representations, please feel free to contact us at customer services at tfwm.org.uk. Ramsey Positive Albion will soon be on the rise. New Albion boss Eric Ramsey has backed the squad he inherited as ready to pull away from the Championship's lower reaches. Ramsey, 34, is Albion's third new head coach in 12 months and faces a tough opener at home to second-placed Middlesbrough on Friday night. The former Minnesota United boss, who has also coached at Shrewsbury, Chelsea and Manchester United, faces a job to hit the ground running and lift the struggling Baggies clear of the 18th place, just 7 points from the drop zone in the second tier. At his first press conference at the Hawthorns yesterday, speaking alongside chairman and owner Shilin Patel, Ramsey was coy on short or long-term targets, but instead underlined his belief in the group of players he inherited to pull the club clear of trouble. "I think it's a very coachable group," Ramsey said when asked about the dressing room he has walked into. "I think the word professionalism has been used a lot by the staff that are around the group. There is a very strong culture of work. There is a very strong support staff from the sports science and performance perspective that is wrapped around that group, and you really get that sense. So, as alluded to, in no way do I feel like I'm going into a club or a changing room where there's a cultural problem or where there are problems with professionalism. It's a really good group, and you can sense that already. My job is now to make sure that the sense of positivity lasts. I build real clarity in terms of the framework and the players are operating in. I demand within that, the staff demands within that. And we start to build some coherence and some consistency in terms of what's being asked." Patel, who was speaking at an open media conference for the first time, emphasised his unwavering belief in the club. 100%. "And I think everybody in the organisation would agree with that assessment," he said when asked about his belief in the squad's capability. And the article is accompanied by a photograph of Eric Ramsey speaking to the media at that press conference. Daunting task for competition judge in culturally rich region. It would be a travesty if any of the finalists came from outside the West Midlands. By Mark Andrews. Sir Philip Redmond is the man who faces the daunting task of overseeing the competition to choose the 2029 UK Town of Culture. He won't need to look very far, as long as he focuses on the West Midlands. On the other hand, choosing which of the region's many culturally rich communities will be a much more difficult choice altogether. From prehistoric rock formations to 1970s glam rock, this is a region that has it all. And if anybody thinks the Tate Modern is the bee's knees, they need to take a trip to the New Art Gallery in Walsall, which, let's not beat about the bush, knocks its London rival into a cocked hat. Or a flat cap, anyway. Starting with the prehistoric rock, Wren's Nest National Nature Reserve in Dudley is known across the world for its unique geology. Going back some 420 million years, Wren's Nest is considered the most diverse and abundant fossil site in the British Isles, with more than 700 different types identified, 86 of which are unique to the location. For a rock of very different kind, the Black Country and surrounding areas was the epicentre of some of Britain's most exciting music scenes during the early 1970s. Robert Plant was born in West Bromwich, although getting the die-hard Wolves fan to back the town's bid may take a little persuasion. Raised in Halesowen and went to King Edward VI Grammar School for Boys in Stourbridge, so he might find a number of entrants calling on his support. Along with John Bonham, who lived in both Walsall and Dudley, he established Led Zeppelin as one of the biggest rock bands on earth. Bonham's son, Jason, continues his father's legacy and would surely be a major player if Dudley was to receive the accolade. Flamboyant Thin Lizzy frontman Phil Lynott was also born in West Bromwich. If you like your music a little lighter, Bilston might be your town of choice, as the birthplace of glam rockers Slade. Bilston-born Don Powell was playing drums for a band called The Vendors, which changed its name to the In-Betweens after recruiting guitarist Dave Hill. The band practised the Territorial Army Drill Hall in Bilston, later recruiting Noddy Holder and Jim Lee, although Walsall-born Noddy may prefer to back his hometown. When it comes to comedy, probably the best face is Lenny Henry, who born at Burton Hospital and grew up in the Buffery Park area of Dudley. His big break came on the New Faces television talent show, and his profile grew with the anarchic television children's show Tis Was, which also featured Walsall funny man Ian Sludge Lees. The West Midlands has produced no shortage of Hollywood legends either, from West Bromwich-born actress Madeleine Carroll, Lye-born Sir Cedric Hardwicke, and Dudley's James Whale, best known for directing the Frankenstein movies. The judges will be asked to pick three finalists, one small town, one mid-sized and one large town. It would be a travesty if any of these three came from outside the West Midlands. The article's accompanied by black and white photographs, one of Led Zeppelin with John Bonham and Robert Plant, both hailing from the West Midlands. One of Dudley-born Lenny Henry, pictured in 1982, surrounded by children, I guess at the height of his Tiswas era, and one of West Bromwich-born Phil Lynott, dressed characteristically in his black leather gear.
Hello, it's Rachel here, and I've got some recordings for you from the 16th of January. Five small bursts of equipment-free exercises to help boost longevity. New research suggests that small increases in daily moderate to vigorous intensity physical activity may reduce the risk of death. This important research shows that even just a few minutes of movement each day can deliver meaningful health benefits. With that in mind, we spoke to Tara Riley, Pilates, bar and strength trainer, who shared five short burst exercises that can be easily woven into even the busiest schedules. Number one, squats. Squats are fantastic, especially if you've done lots of sitting during the day. They are a really great way to reactivate those glutes and use those legs, says Riley. For a standard squat, just put your legs about hip width apart and send your bottom backwards and shift your weight into your heels. You could even do some squats hovering over a chair, as that can help give you a good sense of where your body should be. If you want to make them harder, you could also do little pulses to really fire up your legs so your glutes feel really warm by the end of it. Number two, planks. I would also recommend some sort of variation of a plank, advises Riley. A plank is a really good way to build strength and stability as you are stabilising through your shoulders, your hips and through your core. However, she recognises that holding planks for a long period of time can be challenging, so has suggested some options for beginners looking to work their way up to it. You can start on your hands and knees and do knee taps, suggested Riley. For this, hover your knees off the ground and then tap them back down. Then as you get stronger, hover them off and hold for 20 seconds. Also, if your wrists aren't super happy in this position, you can always go onto your elbows. Number three, hip mobility exercises. I'm also a big fan of hip mobility because I know it's an area that a lot of people really suffer with. Lots of people have got tight hips or painful hips, and sometimes that comes from doing a lot of sitting. Everyone walks and goes up and down stairs, but that's actually only moving that joint in two directions, forwards and backwards. And really, that joint wants to move side to side and in a circle to keep it healthy and happy. She highlights how exercises like hip and leg circles can be done at any time and anywhere and can really help with your mobility. Stand up and pop your hand on a surface and lift one leg straight forward and back to standing 15 to 20 times. Then lift it back for the same amount of reps, instructs Riley. You're going to start to feel those glutes going, and then you can also lift it out to the side again for the same amount. Then bring the knee forwards and then circle it out to the side and round the back. So you're doing a big hip or leg circle. This is a really good strengthening but also mobilising hip exercise. Number four, tabletop toe taps. If you sit at a desk all day long, you might have a tendency to start to hunch forward to look at your work screen, recognises Riley. Doing core exercises like tabletop toe taps is really good for strengthening the core to help you sit and stand up straight. For tabletop taps, you start on the floor. Lie on your back and take your legs in a tabletop position so your knees are bent, instructs Riley. Make sure your knees are above your hips and your shins are parallel to the floor, and then just tap one toe down at a time and bring them back up to the tabletop position. Try to do that whilst breathing, but also without your back moving. So make sure that you aren't arching your back and are really working into that core. If you're feeling really strong, you could curl forwards and keep your head off the floor while you tap your toes. Number five, shoulder glides. I think your shoulder mobility and the ability to move your arms is really important for your back and for how your shoulders feel. So an exercise like shoulder glides can be really great, says Riley. Start by standing upright against the wall, so the back of your head and shoulder blades are both touching the wall. Reach both your arms all the way up overhead, so the backs of your hands are also against the wall. And then draw those elbows down towards your waist and up again. Try to keep the back of your hands and your arms against the wall as you do that. Along with this article is a photograph. It has the caption, "Doing squats with a resistance band can be beneficial." And it shows the body of someone doing a squat, and they have a green resistance belt around their thighs. Man in court over taxi driver's death. A man has appeared in court accused of shooting a Tipton taxi driver dead in 2008. David Harrison, 76, appeared at Wolverhampton Crown Court yesterday. He is charged with the fatal shooting of 39-year-old taxi driver Harun Khan. The father of four died from his injuries after he was shot outside his home in Tudor Street, Tipton, on March 3, 2008. Harrison, of Bilston, also faces wounding relating to the shooting of a 27-year-old man in 2007. 9 Dogs and 5 Snakes Rescued from Disgusting Conditions, by Deborah Hardiman. A woman is facing a ban on owning animals after pets were found caked in dog dirt at a property near West Bromwich. At Dudley Magistrates Court on Wednesday, defendant Katrina Hill blamed health issues for keeping the pets in disgusting conditions, which resulted in animal welfare officers rescuing 9 dogs and 5 snakes from her home in Thompson Road, Bristol, in Oldbury last year. Hill pleaded guilty to an offence that between May 5th and August 5th, 2025, at Oldbury, that she did not take such steps as were reasonable in all the circumstances to ensure that the needs of an animal for which she was responsible, namely 9 dogs, was met to the extent required by good practice, in that confining the said animals to an unsuitable environment, failing to protect the animals from pain, suffering, injury and distress. Miss Janita Patel, prosecuting, told the court that some of the dogs were discovered caked in mess and parts of the premises were saturated in urine. Miss Patel said, "This is a Section 9 offence where she failed to meet the needs of dogs relating to the environment." Animal welfare officer Ashley Moore attended the defendant's home address. The front window was covered in flies and the floor was covered in dog faeces. The police were called, and with their help, access was gained to the property. When they opened the door, the smell of faeces and urine was overpowering. The officer said the faeces on the floor was ankle height, and a number of dogs were running around the property. The only water source for them was a leaking pipe in the kitchen. The court heard that an injured lurcher was found with severely deformed foot, caused by it being bitten months before by another dog, and no treatment had been sought for it. 8 dogs were found with overgrown claws, which were caked in faeces, and 5 snakes were also removed from the address. Miss Patel and Hill had signed over all the pets to the welfare team, and she asked the court to consider banning her from owning any animals for 10 years. She said when Hill, aged 51, was interviewed by officers, she explained that she had mental health issues. Chairman of the bench, Mrs. Teresa Popplewell, adjourned the case until March. Plans to help long-term sick return to work. The government has announced it will introduce robust reforms to help employers recruit more people with disabilities. The Department for Work and Pensions, DWP, is now planning to overhaul the Disability Confidence Scheme, which currently works with around 19,000 employers. Among the changes to the scheme, announced on Thursday in response to Sir Charlie Mayfield's review last November, will be improved feedback from disabled people taking part and information sharing between businesses that access the scheme. Small and medium-sized firms will also be encouraged to take part with tailored support, ministers said. The DWP said the overhaul will help to get the more than 2.8 million people in the UK who are signed off long-term sick into employment. Sir Stephen Timms, Minister for Social Security and Disability, said, "For too long, though, it has not delivered enough support for disabled people or for employers who want to recruit, retain and develop disabled people. That's why we are improving the scheme through robust reforms to ensure a better service for all.
Hello everyone, this is Linda, reading from Saturday the 17th of January's Express and Star. Wheelchair user assigned seats upstairs for music acts concert. Van upset over missing out on accessible tickets for Florence plus the machine gig. A wheelchair user from the Black Country has spoken of her disappointment after using a ticket service to book accessible spots for one of her favourite acts, but finding out she had been assigned seats up flights of stairs. Kelly Bloomer from Rowley Regis and her fiancé of 10 years, Adam Price, claims to have used ticket booking app AXS to purchase tickets for Florence plus the Machine concert in Birmingham next month, as they have many times before due to Kelly's Nimbus card being linked to her account. A Nimbus Card Access Card is a UK-wide disability access card that helps people with disabilities communicate their access needs to venues, ticketing providers, festivals, theatres, sports arenas and other organisations quickly, consistently and discreetly, without having to resubmit personal medical documents every time. However, on this occasion, 37-year-old Kelly was left heartbroken to realise there had been assigned seats for the February the 7th concert at the BP Arena up flights of stairs, despite her account showing she is a wheelchair user due to being born with spina bifida. Speaking of her heartbreak over the situation, Kelly said, "My other half booked tickets for us to see Florence and the Machine in February. We use the AXS app where my Nimbus card is stored, stating which tickets we need, and normally we are allocated the right tickets, being a wheelchair space and a companion ticket. However, it turns out they allocated us the wrong tickets, and the ones they did give us we can't access because they are up a bunch of stairs. We were told they couldn't swap the tickets as wheelchair access ones and the show is now sold out." The couple said they tried contacting the company to exchange the tickets for accessible tickets, but were told none was available. Now, they have been forced to resell the tickets they were assigned. Her partner, Adam, expressed his disappointment too. He said, "I am very sad and very angry. We were really looking forward to this. We've resold the tickets after guidance on the phone from their customer service, and the bad news, there's no more accessible seats. We've decided we're done with this sort of nonsense. It should not be this hard to access tickets and seating all the time. It's so disheartening. BP Pulse Live and AXS have been contacted for comment." Hate crime charge after meat dumped. A man has been charged with a hate crime after raw meat was emptied out of a bag outside a gurdwara. On December 22nd, a man reportedly walked past the Guru Nanak Gurdwara in Edward Street, West Bromwich, and emptied a bag of raw meat outside. The incident was caught on CCTV and was investigated by West Midlands Police as a hate crime. Only vegetarian food is served in gurdwaras, Sikh places of worship. Now police have charged Tomas Brush, aged 42 and of no fixed address, with a hate crime offence. He was due to appear at Wolverhampton Magistrates Court on Thursday. The force has shared its guidance for anyone who witnesses a hate crime. A spokesperson said, "If you witness a hate crime or incident, make sure to report it." Passenger satisfaction levels tracking in the right direction. Reduction in cancellations and improved reliability are key to improved figures. An increasing number of passengers are satisfied with the punctuality and value for money of West Midlands Rail and Metro services. Figures presented by the West Midlands Combined Authorities Transport Delivery Overview and Scrutiny Committee showed growing contentment amongst commuters. A reduction in cancellations and improved reliability were said to be the reason for the improved figures. Between July and September 2025, the percentage of people satisfied with the punctuality of rail services rose to 72%, compared with 67% in the same period of 2024. The number of people satisfied they were getting value for money with rail services also increased to 60% in 2025, compared with 50% the year before. Similarly, with metro services, 95% were happy with the punctuality of services between July and September 2025, up from 2024's 86%. Bus services didn't fare so well. However, with only 45% satisfied with punctuality of services between July and September last year, there was a drop in the number of people who felt they were getting value for money on buses, with just 48% recorded in 2025, down from 56% the year before. Claire Williams, Director of Network Resilience at Transport for West Midlands, said, "Some of the reasons behind customer satisfaction include cancellations on local rail operators have reduced over this period and improvements in train crew availability. Improved perception of the value for money on rail is likely linked to the better reliability and punctuality of the service, with customers feeling they are getting the service they paid for." Two arrested after knife and drugs find. Police arrested two men after cannabis and a knife were found during searches. Patrolling officers spoke to two men sitting in a vehicle in Ridgeacre Road, West Bromwich, on Wednesday evening. They were searched and cannabis, a lock knife, cash and mobile phones were found. Two men, aged 19 and 22, were arrested on suspicion of possession of a knife in a public place and of Class B drugs. Both men have been bailed pending further inquiries. Police say they are cracking down on drug crime and anyone with information should ring them on 101. Five things we love this week. A flagship rewilding project has seen an explosion in wildlife since it began, with bird numbers increasing tenfold in the past two decades. A 20-year-old ecological review at Knapp in West Sussex shows soaring numbers of birds such as nightingales, while the variety of butterfly species has doubled on parts of the estate. Isabella Tree and Charlie Burrell, who own Knapp, halted conventional farming on their estate in 2000 and embarked on rewilding. This date using animals including longhorn cattle, deer, Exmoor ponies and pigs, whose grazing and foraging have helped create scrub, disturbed ground, grassland and wood pasture, providing habitat for a wealth of species. The launch of the first autistic Barbie doll has been welcomed by campaigners and charities as a step towards more authentic, joyful representation for neurodivergent children. The doll features specific design choices intended to reflect some experiences to which autistic people might relate. These include loose clothing to ensure less fabric-to-skin contact and an eye gaze slightly to the side to represent the way some autistic people might avoid direct eye contact. Each doll also comes with a pink fidget spinner to reduce stress and improve focus, and noise-cancelling headphones to block out background sounds and therefore limit sensory overload. A woman who lost her vision due to a rare condition before having her sight restored with injections that pumped up her eye has described the treatment as phenomenal. Nikki Guy suffers from high patony, or low eye pressure, and was the first patient to have her eye injected with a low-cost gel used in most surgeries as part of a project led by experts at Moorfields Eye Hospital in London. The 47-year-old says she is close to being able to drive again and has been able to take her son skiing. She also credited her experience for pushing her towards a new career. "I always wanted to work in communications and I've never been able to make it happen. And actually, it did lead me to TPT, Thomas Pocklington Trust, my current company. The fact that it's a sightless charity, you know, when something just feels like it aligns so perfectly." The Red Arrows has appointed a woman to lead the team for the first time in its history. Wing Commander Sasha Nash has taken on the role of Officer Commanding, making her the most senior officer in the Royal Air Force Aerobatic Team. The experienced fast jet pilot, who joined the Royal Air Force in 2005, will take charge of the 150-strong unit and oversee all aspects of the Red Arrows. Wing Commander Nash said, leading the team as a career opportunity of a lifetime, adding, "If someone had told me 20 years ago that one day I'd be the officer commanding of the Red Arrows, I don't think I would have believed it. This is a team of dedicated, diligent and enthusiastic people, exemplifying the ethos and values found in units right across the RAF, and I'm excited to work with them to continue to deliver the levels of excellence the Red Arrows are globally renowned for." Wicked co-stars Ariana Grande and Jonathan Bailey will star in the musical revival of Sunday in the Park with George. The stars will reunite next summer as they take to the stage for a new production of Stephen Sondheim's critically acclaimed play. The production will take place at the Barbican Theatre in London in 2027, with tickets due to go on sale in May 2026. It comes as Grande and Bailey recently starred as Glinda and Frio, respectively, in the recent film adaptation of Wicked and its sequel, Wicked for Good. The duo shared a photo sat in front of the George Surrey painting, which the production is based on, a Sunday afternoon on the island of La Grande Jatte. The original musical debuted on Broadway in 1984.
Hello, this is Janet reading from the Express and Star for Monday the 19th of January. Blues is back in business at Indoor Market. West Bromwich Indoor Market has its first night of live music on Friday with the return of the iconic Henry's Blues House to the West Midlands. Henry's Blues House, which has roots in the blues scene dating back to 1968, has returned to the West Midlands with the first night of its weekly live gigs at West Bromwich's new Indoor Market every Friday. The first of the weekly gigs saw Birmingham Blues regulars Rich Dickinson's Driving Force take to the stage in a free event. The Live Music Nights events were launched to help drive the nighttime economy in the region and help shine a light on the newly reopened West Bromwich Indoor Market. Opening the first event was Jim Simpson, founder of the renowned blues label Big Bear Music. He said, "The blues have been in the region before, but it's been a long time since it was back in town." Andy Bucknell, West Bromwich Markets and Town Centre Manager, said, "This is really to try and bring life back to West Bromwich High Street. Part of the reason the Indoor Market was built and funded was to bring the nightlife back." For a full list of Henry's Blues House bookings, visit the group's website. Plan to open sweet shop in house rejected after series of objections. A bid to open a South Asian sweet shop in a West Bromwich home has been thrown out by a government planning inspector. Sandwell Council refused a planning application to convert the house in Walsall Road, Stone Cross, West Bromwich, into a sweet shop, saying it would cause too many problems for neighbours. The decision was appealed to a government planning inspector, but has been thrown out after they agreed it would create issues. The inspector said the business would disturb neighbours through noise and odours, and it had not been shown the new shop would meet a specific day-to-day need and could not be better suited in an existing unit in an established centre. The inspector said, "Whilst there are other commercial activities present nearby, the proposal would introduce a new commercial use which would generate noise and smells into a residential enclave between commercial areas and in very close proximity to dwellings, the occupiers of which would be adversely affected by the noise, disturbance and odours as associated with the proposed use." Last year, Sandwell Council said the planned conversion of the semi-detached house by Deepak Verma would create extra noise and odours for neighbours and added to existing parking problems. Adding the shop was inappropriate for the largely residential areas, a total of 11 objections by neighbours were received against the plans when the application was submitted last year. The council highway officers also objected to the new shop, saying the plans only provided a third of the required parking spaces and would add to existing problems, while its public health department also raised serious concerns about the plans over the potential for more noise and odours. Ramsay experiences every emotion on his bow. Albion's new boss might only have been in charge for 90 minutes, but he has already experienced just about every emotion English football's maddening second tier can deliver, writes Matt Mayer. From bemusement and concern at what was shaping up to be a rather chastening experience as his team trailed 2-0 to Middlesbrough, through the adrenaline rush of a rapid comeback to the heartbreak of a late defeat, the 34-year-old can no longer be in any doubt what he has signed up for. When Jed Walsh fired the baggies level with 10 minutes to play on Friday night, capping a quick-fire turnaround, Ramsay would have been dreaming of the kind of fairy tale victory which has the potential to transform seasons. He did not get it. In the end, he did not even get a draw. Delano Bergzorg slamming home a 90th-minute winner for the visitors. Yet amid the undoubted frustration, and not for one moment ignoring the fact that this defeat leaves the baggies still looking nervously over their shoulders towards the bottom three, there were at least positives to be found. For the first hour of the evening, admittedly, they were thin on the ground as they fell to a 2-goal deficit. But Albion fought back. Isaac Price drilled in a free kick before Wallace thumped home the equaliser, all inside the space of 5 minutes, which brought what had been a sleepy stadium to life. Ramsay, head turned to the floor when Silvera struck, now had his fists raised. With the Hawthorns in full voice, his team had momentum. Yet that creaky defence, which his predecessor, Ryan Mason, never managed to fix, cracked again. Bergzorg's winner ruined the ending, and in many respects this felt a familiar story, with the Baggies conceding late to lose just as they had in their previous league match at Leicester. The result, which was the catalyst for Mason's departure and Ramsay's arrival. This was the sixth time Albion have conceded either an equaliser or a winner beyond the 80th minute. There were some differences, however, most notably in how the new head coach's second half changes helped turn the flow of the night. There was encouragement to be found too in the character shown, albeit more belatedly than ideally desired, in the second half. Such spirit will be essential in a climb away from trouble, which may be more tricky than many expect. Ramsay tried to avoid putting too much mitigation into his post-match assessment, instead promising the lessons of the night would be learned. They will need to be quickly. The Baggies are now in the lower table, and tomorrow's match with Norwich now feels that bit bigger. We are all the same, but also so different. New Bishop excited to start work as he moves to region. The new Bishop of Worcester has spoken of the type of bishop he wants to be within the diocese as he begins his new role. Right Reverend Hugh Nelson officially became the 114th Bishop of Worcester at a service of welcome and installation ceremony at Worcester Cathedral on Saturday. The bishop who succeeds the Right Reverend John Inge following his retirement in October 2024 has most recently been the Bishop of St Germans in the Diocese of Truro, a position he has held since 2020, serving as the Acting Bishop of Truro from September 2023 until May last year. He has also been Bishop to the Armed Forces, providing spiritual and pastoral leadership to Anglican chaplains serving in the Royal Navy, British Army and Royal Air Force, a role which he will continue to hold as Bishop of Worcester. As he makes the move from Cornwall up to the West Midlands, the bishop said he had been adjusting to the change in areas and getting used to the wide area of the Diocese of Worcester, which covers Dudley, Sandwell and Wyre Forest. He said, "I've been in a kind of strange situation of leaving one thing and getting ready to go into a new role, so I'm in an in-between time period. The change for me has been through starting to get to know new people, a new place and a new area, including its culture, the communities and their needs and their opportunities and challenges that people face. I'm just in the very early stages of getting to know what's going on in the diocese and the towns around the area." The bishop also spoke about the voyage of discovery for himself moving into the area, speaking of how people are both the same but also very different, and how he couldn't wait to hear their stories. He said, "I guess what I've discovered over the years as I've moved around a bit is that on the one hand, people are the same wherever you go, as we all need the same things. We need communities to belong to, people to love and people who love us, and we need a purpose in life and some beauty. But people are also different, and in different places, communities are different and their stories, history, traditions and cultures are different. I think I'm pretty confident what I'll find is people who are kind of the same as everyone else and people who have got their own particular stories and needs and opportunities, so I can't wait to get started." Bishop Nelson was announced as the next Bishop of Worcester by the young people at a lightbox event at St Helen's Church in Worcester in July last year, and said at the time he didn't want to just come in and make instant changes among the more than 200 churches in the diocese. As he prepares to officially become bishop, he reiterates that he wanted to work along the churches and hear about the challenges and opportunities. He said, "They know what they do and they don't need me to turn up and say, 'Don't worry, folks, start all over again because I'm here.' They've got good plans and I have been around for a long time, so my job is to get to know people, hear what the challenges are, discover what the opportunities are, and to help those churches to become places of hope, as it's not a very hopeful world at the moment. I want our churches to be places that point to God and say that he's the same yesterday, today and tomorrow, and he's always there and he's not about to leave us, so we can get on with loving our neighbours, serving our communities and just being churches." The bishop said he was very well aware of the work his predecessor had done in the role and also praised the current acting Bishop of Worcester, current Bishop of Dudley and his good friend, the Right Reverend Martin Gorrick, saying that he was looking forward to working alongside him and learning more about the area. The first weekend as Bishop of Worcester saw Bishop Nelson visiting churches in the diocese with a service at Top Church in Dudley on Sunday, and today he will be visiting schools and speaking to young people about their challenges. He said it would be energising to spend time talking to the children, saying you will only need 2 minutes with them to feel their excitement. Customers urged to stop flushing stranger things which block sewers. Water firm Severn Trent is urging customers to keep the sewers safe by not flushing those Stranger Things. Just like the location in TV show Stranger Things location, the town of Hawkins, our world looks normal on the surface, but deeper underground, things can be a little bit dark and disgusting thanks to blockages caused by unflushable items. Wet wipes, sanitary products, cotton buds and fats, oils and greases, FOG, are forming monstrous clogs that can wreak havoc on homes and communities. This can lead to flooding in the homes and costly repairs for customers, and that's a horror story no one wants to star in. Grant Mitchell, Severn Trent Blockages lead, said, "Think of your pipes like Hawkins's fragile balance. One wrong move and the upside down breaks through. Every time a wet wipe or a cotton bud goes down the toilet, it's like opening a gate for the monsters to creep in. These blockages grow silently, feeding on fats, oils and grease until they become a mind flayer-sized problem. We've seen entire streets affected and homes flooded all because of items that should have gone in the bin. But by sticking to the three P's, pee, poo and toilet paper, you can protect your home from a real-life horror show. Top tips to keep the home flowing freely and not turn it upside down include: in the bathroom, wet wipes are one of the biggest culprits when it comes to blockages. Even those labelled fine to flush or biodegradable can cause costly problems and should never go down the loo. Only flush the three P's, pee, poo and toilet paper. Everything else belongs in the bin, not the bowl. In the kitchen, wipe plates and pans with kitchen roll to soak up grease before washing. Pour cooled fats, oils and grease into a container and bin it, not down the sink. Grant added, "Next time you are tempted to flush something questionable, remember, keep your drains safe and let's close the gate on blockages for good. But it's not just unflushable items that make their way into the sewers. There's a whole host of stranger things than that, including toys, including a Ken doll, Dora the Explorer, action figure and even Mickey Mouse piece, pieces of garden shed, false teeth, underwear, a chopped up bed frame, glasses, wallets and keys. For more tips, visit stwater.co.uk/my-supply/winter-together.
Welcome back to the Express and Star Pub Quiz, and this week we have five rounds. Question 1. News. Name the storm that brought heavy snow to the UK last week. Question 2. Which high street chain, known for its piercings, has been put into administration? Round 2. Sports. Question 3. Rory McIlroy won his first major golf title at which tournament in 2011? Question 4. Name the most successful country in Africa Cup of Nations history. Round 3. What year? Question 5. Rupert Murdoch was permitted to buy The Times and Sunday Times. Actor Elijah Wood was born. John Lennon's Imagine went to number one in the UK after the singer's death. Roger Moore starred in Bond thriller For Your Eyes Only. But what year? Question 6. Sharon Stone and Michael Douglas starred in Basic Instinct. Erasure hit the top of the singles chart with Arabesque. Prince Andrew and Sarah Ferguson separated. Andrew Morton's book Diana, Her True Story, caused controversy. But what year? Round 4. Who am I? Question 7. A model. I was born in Sudan in 1977. I was raised in a small village and my name allegedly means black spotted cow in my native tongue. I was granted asylum in Britain and was spotted in 1995 by a London modelling agency. I have modelled for a range of fashion houses and I won the 1997 MTV Model of the Year Award. Question 8. An author. I was born in Dorset in 1931. I taught briefly at Eton, but my work for MI5 and MI6 provided the subject matter for most of my novels, which document the post-World War II Cold War climate. These include Call for the Dead and Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. And round 5. Maths. Impossipuzzles. Question 9. In an election, O'Hara and Keaton got 859 votes between them. Lavers and O'Hara got 755 together, whereas Keaton and Lavers got 650 between them. How many votes did each of the three get? And question 10. The serial number of my new computer looks quite an ordinary five-figure number to me, except its first and last digits are the same, said Dad. There's more than that, Dad, Mark told him. It's just three more than twice the square of its other three digits. That did make it rather special. So what was the number? Which was your favourite round? Click to the answers to find out.
Some audio described TV programmes for the next week along with radio programme highlights from Talking News Federation. Search for publications TNF Soundings to hear these directly on their website.
TNF Soundings.
Hello, this is Wharfdale Talking News with your audio-described TV programmes for the period Saturday 24th to the Friday 30th of January, compiled by Val and read by Rebecca. Starting with Saturday the 24th of January. Discover the creatures of the Cornish Gardens in Heligan, Secrets of the Lost Garden on BBC Two at 9:30 a.m. There are four episodes of The Simpsons starting at 10:45 a.m. on Channel 4. Sabre brings destruction to the arena as a new event is revealed in Gladiators at 5:45 on BBC One. Graham Norton presents a special couples edition of Wheel of Fortune at 6 p.m, followed by The Masked Singer at 7 and The 1% Club at 8:30, all on ITV One. The early evening film on Channel 4 at 7 p.m. is the sci-fi adventure Independence Day, starring Will Smith. There's a rude awakening for Flynn when the CQC turn up. The hospital drama Casualty is at 8:35 p.m. on BBC One. Although not audio described, Dolly Parton fans can enjoy a night of programmes on BBC Two dedicated to the Queen of Country to celebrate her 80th birthday, starting at 8:35 with Dolly Parton at the BBC. Dan's life begins to move forward as he finds real happiness with Natasha and her son until Frank reveals the whereabouts of his father. The drama Waiting for the Out continues on BBC One at 9:25 p.m. The Radio Times film of the day on Channel 4 at 9:45 is the wartime drama The Zone of Interest. In 1943, Nazi officer Rudolf Hoss receives a promotion and moves his wife and children into a house directly next to his new workplace, Auschwitz concentration camp. On to Sunday, the 25th of January. Sunday with Laura Koonsberg, featuring interviews with politicians and key public figures, is on BBC One at 9 a.m. The afternoon film on ITV One at 2:15 p.m. is the animated fantasy comedy Shrek the Third. Can a train spotter become an astronaut? Find out in the two-part documentary Mission to Space with Francis Bourgeois on Channel 4 at 6:50 p.m. Rob Brydon presents another round of quick-fire duels in the game show The Floor at 6:55 p.m. on ITV One. The remaining contestants are tasked with making parent and child animal sculptures in the Great Pottery Throwdown on Channel 4 at 7:50 p.m. Rosalind's skills are put to the test with an unusual domestic case in Call the Midwife on BBC One at 8 p.m. In Pilgrimage with Simon Reeve on BBC Two at 8 p.m, the adventurer embarks on the final leg of his pilgrimage in Istanbul. Several choices at 9 tonight. In tonight's episode of The Night Manager on BBC One at 9 p.m, Matthew Ellis has been exposed and Pine can no longer run. He meets Gilberto Hansen and offers a deal, then tries to dismantle the operation. The first episode of a two-part documentary, Confessions of a Killer, is on BBC Two at 9 tonight. In 2009, dentist Colin Howell walked into a police station and confessed to the double murder of his wife and the husband of his former lover 18 years previously. The programme explores the case with access to Howell's confession tapes. In tonight's episode of the drama After the Flood on ITV One at 9, Joe discovers that the two dead men, together with an accomplice, targeted a chemical company belonging to Alan Venson, and the search is on for the mysterious third person. The gangster drama Carlito's Way, starring Al Pacino, is the late night film on Channel 4 at 1:55 p.m. Here are those programmes which are on at the same time throughout the week. On BBC One, Homes Under the Hammer is at 11:15 a.m, Monday to Friday, and Lost and Found in the Lakes is at 2 p.m, Monday to Thursday. On ITV One, Dickinson's Real Deal is at 2 p.m, Monday to Friday. On Channel 4, there are four episodes of the US sitcom Frasier, starting at 9:10 each morning, Monday to Friday. On ITV 3, there are two episodes of Heartbeat, starting at around 5:45 or 5:50 p.m, Monday to Friday. Now for Monday the 26th of January. A new travel series starts tonight on BBC Two at 6:30 p.m. Clive Myrie's African Adventure. In the first episode of this 10-part travel documentary, the broadcaster begins his journey around the continent in South Africa. Continues at the same time each evening this week. As it's Monday, it must be quiz night, starting with Celebrity Mastermind at 7:30, then University Challenge at 8:30, both on BBC Two. Discover more budget-friendly recipes in tonight's episode of Jamie's Feasts for a Fiver on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. In tonight's series finale of the crime drama Linley on BBC One at 8:30 p.m, Linley and Havers probe the murders of two drug dealers. The film One Life on BBC Two at 9 p.m. is a biographical drama starring Anthony Hopkins. In 1938, British stockbroker Nicholas Winton visits Prague and becomes involved in an audacious plan to evacuate hundreds of Jewish children before the Nazis close the borders. In the drama After the Flood on ITV One at 9, Joe and Sam find themselves with two unexpected suspects in custody. It's the final day and just five recruits remain in Celebrity SAS Who Dares Wins on Channel 4 at 9 p.m. Reunited with her on-again, off-again mentor, Harper teams up with Eric to embark on a new partnership. The drama Industry is on BBC One at 10:40 p.m. Tuesday the 27th of January. In Rick Stein's Australia at 7 p.m. on BBC Two, the chef continues his travels. In tonight episodes of Inside the Factory on BBC One at 8, we discover how 120 million boxes of breakfast cereal are made each year at the Kellogg's factory. On BBC One at 9 and 10:40 p.m. tonight, space is being made on the school timetable for a big showdown in the final two episodes of the current series of Waterloo Road. When two widows on a grief cruise depart the ship in Cape Verde to visit a shrine, one of them is found murdered. The Good Ship Murder is on Channel 5 at 9 p.m. A new four-part documentary series starts tonight on Channel 4 at 5 past 10. 999, What Happened Next? Follows the investigators who bring the guilty to justice. Wednesday the 28th of January. The experts at the barn welcome more treasured items in need of care in the repair shop at 8 p.m. on BBC One. More discoveries from archaeological digs are unearthed in Digging for Britain on BBC Two at 8 p.m. Neha helps Debbie find the blackmailer in the drama Can You Keep a Secret on BBC One at 9 p.m. In tonight's episode of Grantchester on ITV One at 9, Leonard spends a night in a prison cell. Patience and Frankie investigate after a monk is found dead, kneeling in prayer in a monastery's chapel. The drama Patience is on Channel 4 at 9. Although not audio described, you might enjoy catching up with the BBC's World Affairs editor and his guests as they reflect on the week's biggest global news stories. Unspun World with John Simpson is on BBC Two at 11 p.m. Thursday the 29th of January. More aspiring entrepreneurs pitch their business ideas in a new series of Dragon's Den on BBC One at 8 p.m. Lorraine is on the last leg of her adventure up Norway's stunning coastline. Lorraine Kelly's Norwegian Odyssey is on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. Lord Sugar searches for his next business partner. A new series of The Apprentice starts tonight at 9 p.m. Two women are searching for siblings they've never met in tonight's episode of Long Lost Family at 9 p.m. on ITV One. Frankie and Patience are held at gunpoint by an escaped prisoner in the final episode of the current series of the drama Patience on Channel 4 at 9 p.m. Sai uncovers hidden tunnels, wartime shelters and a forgotten platform beneath the concourse of Glasgow Central. Britain's favourite railway stations with Sai King is on Moor 4 at 9 p.m. And so we come to Friday the 30th of January. The sleuth investigates when the eccentric ventriloquist Uncle Mirth is arrested for murder. Father Brown is on BBC One at 2 p.m. Monty concludes his horticultural journey in the Netherlands. Monty dons Rhineland Gardens is on BBC Two at 7 p.m. A double bill of Amanda and Alan's Greek Job starts on BBC One at 7:30 tonight. The comedian, writer and lifelong cat devotee catches up with some famous cat lovers and a host of the nation's best loved cats. David Bedil, Catman, is on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. A new eight-part US drama series based on real-life events starts tonight. After a teenager disappears, police track and interrogate a contractor who was last seen with him. Devil in Disguise. John Wayne Gacy is on ITV One at 9 p.m. We end the week with some welcome sunshine. The Friday night crime drama Death in Paradise returns with a new series on BBC One at 9 p.m. Selwyn's return is shaken by the death of a consultant from the Shady Business and Tourism Board. Whose body is found sprawled on a car roof? Did he fall or was he pushed? We hope you find something to interest you from this week's selection.
Now for a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, starting with Saturday, January 24th. A History of the Bible, the Book and its Faiths investigates the origins, development and contemporary meaning of the Bible. It's read by Hugh Bonneville. Radio 4 Extra, Saturday morning at 20 past 7 breakfast time or 12:20 lunchtime, 6:20 in the evening. Lights Up, Dedication, a play presenting three versions of Shakespeare's relationship with the Earl of Southampton. Part 1 is on Radio 4, Saturday afternoon at 3. Part 2 on Tuesday at 2:15. Back to Saturday, and Gershwin's Porgy and Bess is this week's opera on Radio 3 at 6 p.m. And Forged in Steel looks at the history of the steel industry in the UK. Radio 4, 8 o'clock, Saturday night. Sunday, January 25th, Desert Island Discs is the leader of the Conservative Party, Kemi Badenoch. Radio 4, 10 a.m. While in an archive edition from 1999, the award-winning actress Leslie Manville is the castaway. Radio 4 Extra, 11 a.m. or 5 p.m. Price of Meat is a report on the increase in meat smuggling, with risks to both public health and the UK's food and farming industry. Radio 4, Sunday afternoon, 1:30. The dramatisation of Washington Irving's classic ghost story, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. Radio 4 at 3 o'clock. Words of Music marks the 125th anniversary of the death of Queen Victoria, with readings of works by Charles Dickens, Rudyard Kipling, Emily Bronte and Mrs. Beaton, and music by Gilbert and Sullivan, Mendelssohn and others. Radio 3, Sunday evening, 6 o'clock. And Kate Ady presents stories from around the world, in from our own correspondent. Radio 4, Sunday night, 9:30. On to programmes then that are broadcast at the same time, each weekday, Monday to Friday, on the same radio station. So same time, every day, same radio station. Morm's Eye View brings us dramatisations of five of Somerset Maugham's powerful short stories. The first is narrated by Dirk Bogarde, with a cast including Sylvia Sims. Radio 4 Extra for this, all week, at 6:30 in the morning when you wake up, 11:30 pre-lunch, or 5:30 p.m. each weekday, Monday to Friday, Radio 4 Extra. Book of the Week is Craftland. James Fox reads from his book about the lost arts and vanishing skills that once governed every aspect of British life, beginning on Monday with dry stone walling. Radio 4, 11:45 every day this week in the morning, Monday to Friday. Man of Iron, Thomas Tilford and the Building of Britain, biography of the celebrated engineer. Radio 4 Extra at 1:30 in the afternoon or 7:30 p.m. all week. In The Fibre Factor, Hugh Fearnley-Whittenstall examines how humans' intake of fibre has changed over the centuries and explores why we need to eat more of it. Radio 4 all week, 1:45 Monday to Friday. Composer of the week is Franz Wolfgang Mozart, the youngest child of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Radio 3, 4 o'clock. Also all week, The Essay on Disappointment. Rachel Cook takes a wry and wide-ranging look at disappointment on Radio 3. Each weeknight, 9:45 this week. And the Book of Bedtime, The Memory Police, continues on Radio 4, 10:45 p.m. Monday to Friday. On to those individual programmes then to listen to through the week, starting back on Monday, January 26th. The topic for discussion in Start the Week, biology, technology and the future. Adam Rutherford and guests debate how advances in AI, cognitive science and genetics are changing our understanding of the material world. Radio 4, 9 a.m. For lighter listening, on Monday morning, there's an episode of Dad's Army from 1975. Radio 4 Extra, 7:30 in the morning, 12:30 lunchtime, 6:30 p.m. In Great Lives, the subject is Anna Freud, widely considered to be the founder of psychoanalytic child psychology. Radio 4, 3 p.m. And for fans of the Comedy Panel Show, an episode of The Unbelievable Truth, hosted by David Mitchell, on Radio 4 at 6:30. If you're missing just a minute, there's one on Radio 4 Extra at 8 p.m. on Monday. Tuesday, January 27th, and the subject of this week's Lady Killers with Lucy Worsley is Jessie McLaughlin, a woman accused of murdering one of her friends in Glasgow. Radio 4, 3 p.m. Alternatively, People Fixing the World looks at a scheme helping dads in prison become better parents. BBC World Service at just after 3 o'clock. What's Up Docs? Chris and Zan Van Tuchelen explore our response to food and why willpower alone is rarely enough when it comes to eating well in the long term. Radio 4, Tuesday afternoon, 4:30. Well, as it's Tuesday, In Touch brings us news, views and information for people who are blind or partially sighted. Presented as usual by the brilliant Peter White. Radio 4, 8:40 p.m. Wednesday, January 28th. Lines of Duty is the story of the whistleblower who risked his life and liberty to save Britain's railways. Radio 4 Extra for this story, 10 a.m. or 4 p.m. This week in history looks back at the liberation of Auschwitz, January 27th, 1945, the publication of the Oxford English Dictionary on February 1st, 1884, and the events of Bloody Sunday, January 30th, 1972. Radio 4, 11:40 in the morning on Wednesday. There's Vintage Comedy from 1959 with Hancock's Half Hour on Radio 4 Extra at 12:30 lunchtime, or 6:30 alternatively in the evening. Choral Evensong comes from the Chapel of St John's College in Cambridge on Radio 3 at 3. And finally, for Wednesday, a new series of The Artificial Human asks the question, is the AI bubble about to burst? And examines the health of the AI business landscape. Radio 4, 3:30 p.m. Thursday, January 29th. In This Cultural Life, the actor, Sir Jonathan Pryce, talks about his life and career on Radio 4 at 11 in the morning. The drama is a murder mystery, Silent Tide. On the shore of a remote Scottish island, the body of young backpacker and gifted surfer Santiago is found washed up by the tide. Radio 4 for the drama, 2:15, Thursday afternoon. Ghosts of the Farm is the title of this week's edition of Ramblings, in which Claire Balding joins writer Nicola Chester for a circular walk, starting from her home in the village of Inkpen in Berkshire. Radio 4 for this, 3 o'clock. BBC Inside Science presents the latest scientific research to make the news headlines on Radio 4 at 4:30, while in Radical, Amarajan and his guests offer their analysis of the biggest news stories of the week on Radio 4 at 11 p.m. And Amarajan announced this week he's leaving the Today programme on Radio 4, but he will be continuing to do this podcast for the BBC, we understand. So Radical, Radio 4, 11 p.m. On to Friday, January 30th, offering nostalgia with an episode of Steptoe and Son. 1971 this was made. It's on Radio 4 Extra to wake you up at 7:30 in the morning, 12:30 lunchtime, 6:30 p.m. The series Materials of State continues with the history of Black Rod, which is unusual for being both a person and an object, parliamentary officer and the ebony staff that they carry. Radio 4, 2:45, Friday afternoon. Gardener's Question Time answers listeners' queries on aspects of horticulture on Radio 4 at 3. Well, Friday night is Music Night, another chance to hear a concert which was broadcast live from the Chichester Festival Theatre last January. Highlights from classic film scores from British cinema. Radio 3, Friday night, 7:30. While Americast explores the culture and social stories defining the political debate in the United States and influencing the rest of the world as well. Radio 4 for Americast, Friday night, 11 o'clock. That's it. Thank you to Wendy for the highlights this week. May I wish you a peaceful, safe and enjoyable one of radio listening.
TNS Soundings.
Here are the answers for the quiz. Question 1. News. Name the storm that brought heavy snow to the UK last week. Storm Goretti. Question 2. Which high street chain, known for its piercings, has been put into administration? Claire's Accessories. Round 2. Sports. Question 3. Rory McIlroy won his first major golf title at which tournament in 2011? The US Open. Question 4. Name the most successful country in Africa Cup of Nations history. Egypt. Round 3. What year? Question 5. Rupert Murdoch was permitted to buy The Times and Sunday Times. Actor Elijah Wood was born. John Lennon's Imagine went to number one in the UK after the singer's death. Roger Moore starred in Bond thriller For Your Eyes Only. But what year? 1981. Question 6. Sharon Stone and Michael Douglas starred in Basic Instinct. Erasure hit the top of the singles chart with Arabesque. Prince Andrew and Sarah Ferguson separated. Andrew Morton's book Diana, Her True Story, caused controversy. But what year? 1992. Round 4. Who am I? Question 7. A model. I was born in Sudan in 1977. I was raised in a small village and my name allegedly means black spotted cow in my native tongue. I was granted asylum in Britain and was spotted in 1995 by a London modelling agency. I have modelled for a range of fashion houses and I won the 1997 MTV Model of the Year Award. I am Alec Weck. Question 8. An author. I was born in Dorset in 1931. I taught briefly at Eton, but my work for MI5 and MI6 provided the subject matter for most of my novels, which document the post-World War II Cold War climate. These include Call for the Dead and Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. I am John le Carré. And round 5. Maths. Impossipuzzles. Question 9. In an election, O'Hara and Keaton got 859 votes between them. Lavers and O'Hara got 755 together, whereas Keaton and Lavers got 650 between them. How many votes did each of the three get? O'Hara, 482, Keaton, 377, and Lavers, 273. And question 10. The serial number of my new computer looks quite an ordinary five-figure number to me, except its first and last digits are the same, said Dad. There's more than that, Dad, Mark told him. It's just three more than twice the square of its other three digits. That did make it rather special. So what was the number? 31253. 31,253. Which was your favourite round? I'm Sarah Ann, and I'll be back next time. Bye!
Hello, this is Trevor, reading articles from the Express and Star, Tuesday, the 20th of January. Mother accused of killing her baby by shaking, jury is told. A mother has gone on trial, accused of murdering her two-month-old daughter. Little Harleen Baines died after suffering multiple fractures due to an impact with a hard surface and from being shaken, a jury heard yesterday. The baby died after sustaining head injuries at a masonette in Caddy Crescent, West Bromwich, on July the 23rd, 2020. Her mother, Zara Arsalan, also known as Shandeep Talwandi, aged 31, is standing trial at Coventry Crown Court, where she is denied murder. Giving evidence yesterday, paediatric neurodiologist Stavros Stivaros showed the jury a series of scan images taken of Harleen. He said her brain injuries are likely to have been caused by her being shaken. Arsalan claims the baby was injured when she was punched by her then partner, Jatinder Baines, resulting in her falling unconscious to the floor while holding the baby. The trial continues. Overheated hair straighteners to blame for fire in City Flats block. The cause of a fire which damaged a flat in a high-rise block has been revealed to be a set of hair straighteners. The fire broke out in a flat on the 9th floor of the 11-storey Hampstead House on Coniston Crescent in Hampstead near Great Bar on Monday, January the 12th, with 6 fire engines and 2 4x4 brigade response vehicles attending the scene. West Midlands Fire Service said the fire was extinguished by firefighters wearing breathing apparatus while 3 neighbouring flats were checked for fire spread but were confirmed to be clear of damage. The fire service also said there were no casualties or injuries and confirmed the cause of the fire. A spokesman for West Midlands Fire Service said the cause of this fire was a set of hair straighteners as they had been plugged into an extension cable. West Midlands Police also had confirmed at the time that while officers carried out searches, a cannabis farm containing 16 plants was found inside an adjacent flat. A spokesman for the force said, "We were called to assist West Midlands Fire Service after a fire at a block of flats in Coniston Crescent shortly before 6:30 a.m. While carrying out searches, a cannabis farm containing 16 plants was found inside an adjacent flat. Anyone who knows more about who might be responsible for the cannabis grow can call 101, quoting log 441 of January the 12th. Sandwell Council has been contacted about the cannabis farm find. Pupil finds body on school fields. City Academy forced to close as police launch investigation into man's death. This article is by Dan Stacey. A black country school was forced to shut after an 11-year-old pupil discovered a man's body in the grounds. Emergency services were called to Smesto Academy on Windmill Crescent, Wolverhampton yesterday morning after the body was found during a PE lesson. The school was forced to close as a police launched an investigation into the death. The father of the 11-year-old girl who found the body said the discovery had left her really shaken up. She spotted the body when she made her way onto the playing fields for a PE lesson around 10 a.m. It is understood that her Year 7 class were the first to have the subject this week and that no pupils had been on the field prior to the start of the lesson. The father said, "My daughter found her mum screaming and told her that she found a dead body by the goalposts on the field. She's only 11 years of age. It's left her really shaken up and we've come to take her out of school early. It's terrible what she's had to see." A spokesperson for West Midlands Police yesterday said, "We were called to Smesto Academy after the discovery of a body in the grounds. Emergency service was called at around 10:40 a.m. and the man was sadly pronounced dead at the scene. Smesto Academy has announced they will be open as usual today with pupil assemblies throughout the morning to reassure students affected by the incident, which is not connected to the school." A spokesperson said, "Police have asked us to close so they could make headway with their investigation. There will be pupil assemblies throughout the morning to reassure them. If your child has been affected, they can speak with their head of house who will be able to provide specialist support." West Midlands Ambulance Service said two ambulances and a paramedic had attended the scene. A police spokesperson added, "Inquiries are underway to confirm the man's identity and the circumstances around his death. Anyone with information should get in touch via live chat or 101, quoting log 1452 of 19th of January. Sido has new team managed by quiz legend. Sido Berahino's playing days seem to be behind him, but he now looks set to pull the boots back on for a charitable cause. The former Albion striker has had a varied career since departing the Hawthorns, having burst onto the scene as one of the hottest properties in English football. Berahino's departure and story has been well documented over the years, and he last played professionally in Slovenia last year. It was reported recently that Berahino is making the move into coaching, but now he's pulling the boots back on alongside other former Premier League players for a charitable cause as the latest signing for Inter Legends FC. The team was set up to bring together ex-professional players and non-professionals, and they are then take on teams in charity matches to raise money for good causes. And Berahino has become the latest player to link up with the side. Alongside other Premier League players, such as Henry Lansbury, Paul Konchesky, Ricky Lambert, Fraser Campbell and Kieran Clark. In another twist, the side is managed by famous ITV quizzer from hit show The Chase, Sean Wallis, who is known on the show as the Dark Destroyer. And Berahino could be back in action when Inter Legends take on a People's Pundit side at Walsall Bescot Stadium on Thursday. Sandwell's regeneration projects gather pace. Sandwell's regeneration story continues to grow with more than 80 projects either completed or underway or in development supported by £3 billion of public and private sector funding. This investment brings together a coordinated mix of housing, transport, education, health and town centre developments designed to improve people's quality of life. Councillor Peter Hughes, Sandwell Council's Cabinet Member for Regeneration and Infrastructure, said, "It's more than a list of projects. This is our commitment to building a thriving future. Together with our partners, including central government, we're making a healthier, more prosperous borough where residents can access well-paid jobs, modern housing, quality education and greener spaces. Building on the area's history of manufacturing for the world, we're forging the workforce of tomorrow, fostering emerging technologies and supporting businesses big and small to make it in Sandwell. Projects already benefiting the community include Sandwell Aquatic Centre in Smethwick and the new West Bromwich Indoor Market, which opened last year. Also in West Bromwich Town Centre, the old King Cinema is being demolished. Following demolition of the former Wilco site, these are the first actions of developing the West Bromwich Master Plan, which will generate more than £300 million of investment in a high-quality, vibrant, mixed-use development to breathe new life into this key strategic centre. In partnership with Sandwell College, Cradley Heath Skills Campus has been designed to prepare students for skilled and technical careers, while Midland Learning Campus, next to the new hospital in Smethwick, will provide training in healthcare-related jobs. In Tipton Town Centre, work has started on 70 new council homes with improvements along Owen Street and to public spaces due to finish by the summer. Further new housing is also planned for earmarked sites in Wednesbury and Smethwick. While residents have recently moved into 12 new council homes built on a former brownfield land in Crosswells Road, Albury, all parts of Sandwell Council try to provide hundreds of new affordable homes. In Blackheath, completion of a new bus interchange and landscape public space around Marketplace now provide better transport links and improve safety with new zebra crossings. A major investment involving Sandwell Council and West Midlands Combined Authority seeks to open up highly contaminated brownfield sites for development of hundreds of new homes in Friar Park. Friar Park is also a part of the government's new Pride in Place programme, through which over 10 years will receive up to £20 million, with the community involved actively in planning this investment. This will build on improvements already made in Wednesbury through the Levelling Up partnership, including a new town square, tree planting, paving and new CCTV installed alongside other crime prevention measures. Smethwick is awaiting government approval for its Plan for Neighbourhood scheme, also worth up to £20 million over 10 years. Top ratings for roads marked on ministerial visit. This article is by James Vukmirovich. A ministerial visit helped Sandwell Council to mark a special day and celebrate its high rankings under a new system for highway maintenance. Sandwell Council is celebrating a green rating under the government's new national traffic light system for highway maintenance, a top assessment recognising strong performances, long-term investment and best practice in road upkeep. Sandwell ranks fourth out of 154 local highway authorities, LHASs, nationally, of which only 16 were rated green, and is the top-rated LHA in the West Midlands. The announcement came just in time for National Pothole Day, was marked by a visit from local roads minister Simon Lightwood MP, who saw Sandwell's innovative multi-hog road repair machine in action. The new ratings are in line with the annual National Highways and Transport, the NHT survey, where Sandwell ranks among the top four councils nationally for highway condition and pothole prevention. In addition to the NHT survey, the council undertakes an annual resident survey which shows which residents' satisfaction with roads maintenance in Sandwell is more than double the national local government benchmark.
Albion match report. Norwich climbed out of the Championship relegation zone for the first time since October as an emphatic second-half performance helped them thrash West Brom 5-0 at the Hawthorns. The win sees Felipe Clement's side climb to 20th, albeit with Portsmouth in action on Wednesday, just a point behind West Brom, who have lost back-to-back games under new boss Eric Ramsey. The home fans made their feelings known after Oscar Suarto's third goal of the season gave Norwich a deserved lead in the first half, with Ali Ahmed's precise strike to double the away side's advantage just minutes after the restart, doing little to improve their mood. Annie Spence-Lemaine's goal and a powerful drive from Ben Crisine saw Baggies fans heading for the exits, while the ones who did stay watched as Matthias Quistgaarden make it 5 in the 89th minute to confirm West Brom's 4th league defeat in a row. Norwich had enjoyed the better of possession in the opening period of the game, with West Brom struggling to get out of their own half, as the driving wind and rain seemed to cause real problems for the home side's backline. That sense of nervousness possibly played a part in the opening goal after 16 minutes, when Kenny McLean, threading the ball through Suatu, who found himself in plenty of space, 30 yards from goal, as the hosts just backed off, allowing the Dane to arrow an effort into the bottom corner. West Brom had struggled to carve out any chance of note until going behind. However, Carlin Grant had an opportunity straight after the goal that he was unable to keep his header down, with Samuel Illing Jr. also sending a header over the bar from close range. Christian Bailick went close for the home side, who were asking questions of Norwich defence before Illing Jr.'s curling effort crashed off the post on the verge of half-time. Both managers made two changes at the break, and it was Norwich who benefited as substitute Slimane came on to the cause all sorts of problems for West Brom. Just 4 minutes into the second half, he showed great footwork to chop back inside and lay the ball off for Ahmed, whose first-time effort from 12 yards found the top corner. It was nearly 3-0 a moment later, as Slimane again caused panic in West Brom defence, finding Callum Fisher, but his effort was well saved by home goalkeeper Josh Griffiths. Illing Jr. then called Norwich stopper Vladan Kovacevic into action shortly after the hour mark, with another powerful strike from the edge of the box, but the Bosnian keeper did well to tip the shot over the bar. Norwich made it 3-0 with 20 minutes remaining, with Slimane following up on his own initial effort, which Griffiths had pushed onto the post, slammed the ball into the net with home defenders caught on their heels. A few minutes later, Norwich got their 4th as the hosts again failed to deal with the loose ball in their box, allowing Crisine to smash his effort into the roof of the net. West Brom were all at sea as the clock ticked down, with Norwich looking dangerous every time they broke up the park, and they did add a 5th late on as substitute Papa Diallo and Quistgaarden combined in the box before the Danish striker prodded the ball into the net. After losing his first match in charge, 3-2 to Middlesbrough on Friday, Ramsey has now tasted defeat in his opening 2 games as Baggies boss, and his side are in action again on Friday evening away at Derby. Eric Ramsey said, "We never felt like we had any assurance or control of the game, and in critical moments we just weren't good enough. When it came to individual battles from a defensive perspective, and certainly moments on the ball over the course of the first half, which led to us feeling like we couldn't build what we wanted to build, and it ultimately made it into a very one-sided night, which is certainly not what I was expecting. I have to be really balanced in the way I think about it at the moment, because I felt like on the night one, there was a lot of good to the performance against Middlesbrough, and I came in tonight with a lot of optimism. I am 8 days in. It is a situation that I have to make sure I see very clearly, that I separate my time here from everything that has gone and has led up to this, because ultimately I have come in with a real sense of energy, recognising the magnitude of the challenge. But I've also got to recognise that this is a tricky situation and we've got to find a way through. And I will lead in that way and make sure we are really positive and constructive. But also it is made very clear to the players where we fell short and why. I know the gravity of this situation and what he's going to need and the toughness that goes with it. As head coach and a group of staff around a group of players that are showing some fragility. But I've got to make sure that we support them in the right way. We make sure we are constructive. We find positives where we can find positives. We bring the negatives front and centre. And we meet some of that difficulty head on.
TNF Soundings.
My name is Lindsay. I started producing topical items during lockdown to keep my neighbours entertained. All the recordings are made inside my cosy cabin for that extra sense of calm. And naturally enough, I called them Cabin Conversations. I hope you enjoy them. Cabin Conversations about Up Helly Ar. The Shetland Islands, Scotland, invented the Up Helly Ar as a Viking-based fire festival, which today takes place annually on the last Tuesday of January, and so will be celebrated on the 27th this year. The dark winter months on a remote Scottish island is said to have bored young military men returning from a somewhat lively Napoleonic Wars. Their desire for some spectacle and daring mischief started the custom of using large barrels of tar from the sailing port, set on fire, then rolled through the narrow streets as the Christmas season ended. Indeed, the title Up Helly Ar literally means Up Holy Day All. Or perhaps the more long-winded translation, derived from the various Old Norse words, translates as End of Holiday Festival Days for All, and therefore celebrated on Twelfth Night after Christmas. In fact, the Norse word Ufpi, although pronounced differently, does denote the sense of something being at an end, and is still used in Iceland and the Danish-influenced Faroe Islands. Of course, the flaming barrels of tar were less than safe, and was frequently complained about by the more educated among the Shetland Islanders. These took it upon themselves to invent a celebration to satisfy all ages with dramatic historic links to Viking heritage, yet maintaining a more organised structure to the proceedings. They appointed special police constables for the festival and eventually changed the dates to January, forcing a break between Twelfth Night revelry and thus reducing crowd drunkenness. The first Yule torch procession took place in 1876. This torch procession became bigger and bolder for the visit of Alfred, Duke of Edinburgh, who was the second son of Queen Victoria, by starting the tradition of elaborate dressing up in Viking costumes, or guising, to be widespread. Although the guiser Jarl, the chief Viking, was only introduced after 1889. Coincidentally, the same year the wooden galley ship appeared on the scene, a fitting Viking tribute to be set alight and burned as the grand finale. After the First World War, there seemed to be another tweak to the festival, introducing the idea of geyser jarl squads. Modern-day processions are similar to this 19th century format, with the exception of the overseeing chief jarl in Lerwick, who must be on the Up Helly Ar committee for 15 years to qualify. Plus, the jarl squads are now inclusive, excepting women and children. In fact, there has been a whole junior Jarl squad allowed since 1956. They have an early evening torch procession culminating in the burning of their own Viking longship, all of which is made by the adult committee volunteers. This education in Shetland traditions continues during May to September, where they install the Up Helly Ar exhibition in the Galley Shed, Lerwick, explaining to visitors the history of the festival. Displays include geyser jarl squad outfits and a short information film. As jarl squads select a new theme each year, along with producing emblem banner flags, the homemade outfits are remade from September onwards, a huge undertaking when considering the number of participants involved. In 2025, there were 47 YARL squads, made up of 981 guisers, and some of the themes were Wicked from the musical, Rocking the Jailhouse, Strictly Callum Dancing, presumably named after that year's Chief YARL, Shetland's Got Talent, Alternative Island Games, and even more diverse, Hooray for Monkeys. Once the processions are complete and the torches have set alight the galley replica Viking longships on the water at Lerwick, various YARL squads, junior and adult, disperse to visit halls, schools and other venues in 11 locations across the Shetland Islands, performing their own unique entertainment acts and attending private parties. Indeed, they are probably all vocally warmed up by then, having sung the traditional fire festival songs during all the celebrations. Here's the Oop Heliar song from the Teachers YARL squad, accompanied by the Lerwick Brass Band and with kind permission from Making Waves Records in Shetland, found via www.makingwaves.uk.com. May the old and new traditions unite communities in song and celebration for many more years.
TNF Soundings.
Holocaust Memorial Service 2026 in Sandwell. Sandwell Annuals Holocaust Memorial Service will take place on Sunday the 25th of January. Everyone is welcome to attend. The service will be held from 11 a.m. to 12 noon at Memorial Gardens, Highfields House, High Street, West Bromwich, B70 8RJ. Memorial Day marks the anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz Birkenau, the largest Nazi death camp. We will commemorate the 6 million Jewish men, women and children murdered during the Holocaust and the millions more murdered under Nazi persecution. We also learn and commemorate where persecution led in Cambodia, Rwanda, Bosnia and Darfur. Kindly returning for Sandwell's commemorative service is Mindu Hornick, MBE, awarded in services to Holocaust education, as a guest speaker. She will share her inspiring yet heartbreaking journey as a Jewish Auschwitz Holocaust survivor. This year's Holocaust Memorial Day Trust theme is Bridging Generations, calling on us to honour the past while positively shaping the future. In line with the theme, the service will include the reading of another Holocaust survivor's story, shared at their request. The theme is a reminder of our shared responsibility to listen to the stories of survivors and carry those lessons forward. By doing so, the voices of the past continue to inspire and connect to voices of the future, building a bridge between history and the present. The Mayor of Sandwell, Councillor Steve Melia, said, "Holocaust Memorial Day is a time for reflection, remembrance and learning. by hearing directly from survivors and those who help carry their stories forward, we honour the victims and reaffirm our commitment to building a more compassionate and inclusive society.
TNS Soundings.
This is Colin with an article written by Fiona about the problems that guide dog owners can have in accessing shops, businesses and services. This can be a problem all year round, but at this time of the year it results in many visually impaired people feeling excluded from Christmas festivities. As preparations for the festive season get underway, many of us are looking forward to social occasions, such as dinner with friends, parties and family get-togethers. This should be the season of good cheer for everyone, including for people with visual impairments who use assistance dogs. Sadly, however, that's not always the case. The Guide Dog Charity reports that owners of guide dogs continue to face access refusals. Often, businesses and services, including cafes, shops and taxis, refuse entry to people accompanied by guide dogs, despite this almost always being illegal. Ruby J, a guide dog owner from Colchester, shared her experiences, saying, "I've been illegally refused service about 25 times this year. It's humiliating and stressful. I'm even skipping my Christmas party to avoid facing another rejection." As part of its Open Doors campaign, the Guide Dog Charity reports on its website that 75% of guide dog owners say they've experienced an access refusal in the past. Advice on the Guide Dog's website advises that businesses should train their staff to recognise assistance dogs and to understand current equality legislation that allows access to those with assistance dogs. Wrongly refusing entry can have serious consequences for guide dog owners. A guide dog owner in Stevenage says, "Each refusal is crushing, confidence-shattering, rejecting and traumatic. I always feel that I don't want to go out after, but work dictates I must." In Wales, the Pembrokeshire Herald reports that Sue Canham, a guide dog owner from Tenby, has also experienced discrimination. Recently, six taxis at Cardiff train station refused to transport her and her guide dog. Sue has also faced refusals at restaurants and pubs, raising serious concerns about the treatment of visually impaired individuals. As recently as November, two taxi drivers in Bradford were fined £600 each and stripped of their licences for refusing to pick up a passenger with a guide dog. Another taxi driver who refused to allow two blind customers to get into his vehicle with their guide dogs at Chester Railway Station was fined £200. Guide Dogs Open Doors campaign explains that under the Equality Act of 2010, guide dog and other assistance dog owners have the right to enter most services, premises and vehicles with their dogs. But sadly, more than 40% of guide dog owners who faced an access refusal last year had been turned away from food and drink premises. Siobhan Mead from Stevenage in Hertfordshire, a guide dog owner since 2003, says she has been refused access at least 30 times. Ms. Mead told ITV News Anglia that she hung her head in shame the first time it happened. "I just didn't know what to do," she said. "I just felt humiliated standing on the doorstep knowing that I was allowed to go in with everyone watching me. It just felt so embarrassing. Nobody should ever feel like they don't belong, because at the end of the day, we're all one medical condition or accident away from disability. Disability doesn't discriminate. It's sad and upsetting to find some of our friends and neighbours may be prevented from making the most of the festive season because some individuals refuse them access with their guide dog." On the website www.guidedogs.org.uk, you'll find information for businesses and for taxi and private hire vehicles which are available to download as PDF files.
TNS Soundings.
A big thank you to all our volunteers who've read the Express and Star articles for us this week. Mia, Jan, Rachel, Linda, Janet and Trevor. Thanks to Sarah Ann for doing the quiz and to Sue for picking all the articles. Have a lovely week, everyone.
And thanks to you too, Pam, and to Gavin and Tony distributing the post-edition. Also, there's the upload to the internet, which I'm not sure if Sarita's doing it at the moment because she's not been very well. The uploads do include being able to listen to the talking news on the page within SVI's website. If you just search for Samwell Talking News, there's also a podcast there, which you can download or listen to online. I must tell you, we are experimenting with chapters within the podcast. So that means that each article, I Do My Work Properly, has its own section within the podcast you might choose to download. It's experimental at the moment. Don't be too surprised if it doesn't work out as it should. But it did last week. The podcast actually reflects what people get in the post. That is, being able to skip backwards and forwards by tracks. Give it a try. If you've got a smartphone, then a lot of podcast apps will support chapters, and specialist devices like the Victor Reader Stream 3 will, and one or two of the other specialist players. I was glad to be able to squeeze in another reminder about the Blues Nights at the Market Hall in West Bromwich. Liz Hammer of Samwell Active Independent Blind Association circulated the news about those. I'm not sure that it's quite as easy to get to the indoor market from the tram stop as it was a month or so ago, because there's a lot of redevelopment going on around the bus station and the end of King Square, which means you can't walk to the tram as easily through the bus station or through King Square as you used to. Bye bye for this week. We'll be back with you next week, and do get the pen drives back to us as soon as possible. Bye-bye for now from me, Ray, for this week.
To use our talk phone service to listen to Sandwell Talking News or leave us a message, phone 0121 699 6696. If you are using a landline in the 0121 area, then just dial 699 6696.